Alex Hooper joins me. And we're talking Tribe. Hoop, it's, let me ask you this. Is this a bad spot? Are they in a good spot? I've heard people talk about how, what a strange, unique situation the Indians are in right now, and that it is very difficult when you're talking about things like trading Trevor Bauer. But I love the fact that they can be creative with the trade deadline approaching. They don't have to be buyers or sellers. They can really do whatever the hell they want.
That's so very true, and it is a really unique position. I think going into it, first of all, creativity is what Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff do best. I mean, they had to be creative this offseason, and I know the Yandy and Bowers thing hasn't worked out quite yet. I think that's more of a long-term play anyway. But, I mean, just look at that Yan Gomes trade where Daniel Johnson's one of your top prospects right now. Jeffrey Rodriguez was solid from the get-go. And then, oh, yeah, you pop Roberto Perez into the lineup full-time. He's rehauled his stroke, and all of a sudden, you know, he's – I thought he was an AL All-Star, but you couldn't fit him in just because of roster expectations and needs and everything like that. So, I mean, being creative is what they're good at, and that's certainly, like you said, where they're at. And it is kind of difficult where all of a sudden you're winning, and you're like, all right, well, what do we really need? And you have to look at the market and be like, I don't know that there's a ton that's actually an upgrade. And I think, funny enough, you look at a guy like Tyler Naquin, who throughout, I don't know, probably the last 3 years, you can say, this guy's not going to be it. This is a place where you need to upgrade. And then all of a sudden, the last couple of weeks, he gets hot, and he looks like a guy who can propel you to the next step. And you go into the trade deadline, you're floating in, and you're like, all right, do we really replace this guy? Do we have to? What kind of message does it send? So you have to really consider a lot of options, but I think you still have to be buyers to a degree. I don't think you have to sell the farm. You're only, you know, three games out. It's not like you have to go out and make a gigantic splash. I don't know that there's a gigantic splash out there to be made, but yes, creativity will be key. And I think as much as Indians fans tend to get upset at the front office, I think you'd be upset at the ownership. I don't think you'd be upset at the front office, because generally they've done pretty darn well when they've been in a spot like this.
No, and yeah, if nothing else, I mean, I think you have to place your trust in those guys. And I do think Indians fans have an idea of that, that the restrictions are placed in the front office by ownership. And you know, we've had that conversation before. It's both an Indians problem and it's a Major League Baseball problem. But as far as the way to approach the next 10 days and being creative and trusting the front office, doesn't that mean they'll trade Trevor Bauer? I mean, doesn't it make the most sense, I think, from both a short and long-term perspective to make that move right now? Because I feel like he's a depreciating asset with every second that ticks.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it is the way to best maximize your value. I mean, if you don't see him as a part of the team next year anyway, you're looking into it. And if you're going to trade him at some point, you've got to think he's got more value right now. But teams might not be as ready to prepare their best package for him in the middle of the year, because you don't want to upset things too much. You know, in the winter, you're like, all right, well, this is our team and we're going to take it into the spring, and how can we retool it and be the best when we get to the spring? Right now, there are some other aspects where you don't want to upset things, and making an addition just to make an addition isn't the best move. And the team that's been most rumored to land Trevor Bauer is the Padres. And I don't know why they would want to trade any young assets just to get him now and take him into arbitration next year for one more season. I mean, they're good five games out of the wild card, which isn't terrible, but they've got a lot of quality teams, you know, either tied with them or in front of them in the NL. And I can't see a place where, unless they get really hot, I mean, really hot, I don't know how you're going to get into the playoffs if you're the Padres. And I don't know that a pitcher every 5 days really helps you in that regard. So I'm not sure the Indians are getting a ton of offers for Trevor Bauer right now. I don't think that the market is shaping up as much as people might think for a guy like Trevor Bauer. And I think it's just a matter, again, of what time of the season it is. And also, he's regressed a little bit. He's regressed a little bit back to what he was prior to last year. And if you look at the whole of his career, then the guy that he is right now, while still pretty good, he's not, you know, that elite level sort of trade chip that he was probably headed into the season. And I think that's complicated things a lot.
We're talking to Alex Hooper, 92.3 The Fan alum, contributor for Let's Go Tribe. I think every time you see Shane Bieber with an effective start or Plesac, who we'll see today, it sort of alleviates some of the tension around, or at least the question marks, around potentially trading Bauer. As far as Bieber goes, are we out a little over our skis in terms of projecting him and who he can be? You know, Peterlin and I have gone kind of back and forth on what his ceiling is. What is Shane Bieber's ceiling, and what's reasonable to expect from him moving forward this season and then long term?
You know, I don't think we're out over our skis with him at all. I think this is a guy who he's done everything that you want from a scouting perspective. I mean, every place that he's been, yeah, he's been a college arm, and college arms tend not to develop at the same rate as high school arms. Obviously, they're a little further in their development when they get there, but he's still been towards the tail end of his minor league career because he moved so fast. He was still pretty young for his level, and he went out and dominated. I mean, absolutely dominated. And then he got to the big leagues with the kind of, I don't want to say underwhelming stuff, but it wasn't blow away, put away stuff. And he's just done nothing but work and improve his stuff. He's, you know, worked with Trevor Bauer and Mike Clevenger to, as Clev said, to let his stuff eat a little bit. And he's just increased his velocity, and he's still got that pinpoint control. So, I mean, he's a guy who's going to believe in all of the things that make elite pitchers into elite pitchers nowadays. He's going to be a guy who, because of who he surrounds himself with and the kind of thought process that he has, he's going to worry about tunneling his pitches. He's going to worry about, you know, when to throw what, how to sequence his stuff, and how to shape his pitches a little more and do all of the things that have made, you know, Trevor Bauer take that big step last year, guys, you know, Charlie Morton, stuff like that. The things that the Astros are really good at doing with developing pitching. He's a guy, I think, who is going to be very interested in those things just based on where he's positioned himself. And he's still really young. And when you package the stuff and the desire to learn and the growth mindset and that pinpoint control, I mean, I think the sky is the limit for him. And I think with the Indians' development system, yeah, they're not quite the Astros, but the way they're just churning out pitchers, they're obviously doing something right. And I think a lot of it is mindset, and I think Shane Bieber has that.
Yeah, to me, that's been the biggest development, or really what's sort of kept this team afloat all season. You can talk all you want to about Carlos Santana early in the year, and where would this team be without him and his bat in the middle of the lineup. But with all the injuries and everything that's beset this rotation, for them to just be sliding guys in and then performing, it's certainly a testament to the front office and their ability to both identify and then develop starting pitching talent. One of the guys, when I'm mentioning being beset by injuries, of course, is Corey Kluber, and what a boost he would be if he could come back. And look, you don't need, you know, Klubot, Cy Young Corey Kluber. You just need reliable Corey Kluber. You wrote a great piece the other day for letsgotribe.com about what you think he should do when he makes his way back, and that includes sort of saying goodbye to his sinker. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so over the course of the last couple of years, and if anyone out there has read Travis Sawchuk and Ben Lindbergh's MVP machine, you're going to know what I'm talking about, because it's kind of where I pull a lot of this from. And if you haven't checked that out, Travis is a Northeast Ohio guy and one of the premier writers on baseball in the world. So definitely check it out. But basically, you're seeing teams, forward-thinking teams like the Astros, like I said, saying goodbye to pitchers' sinkers, and they're finding great success with it. Basically, what happens with the sinker is you're throwing it to induce contact, and you're throwing it to induce ground ball. And what Ben Clemens over at Fangraphs found is that you don't get as many more ground balls from throwing sinkers to make up for the damage that they incur when put in the air. Mm. Obviously, we're in a time where hitters are trying to lift the ball. They're trying to put their bat plane or swing plane on the same plane as the pitch, and that will cause it to fly. And sinkers, as opposed to four-seamers, carry way more in the air. They take way more damage because I think they align themselves with that plane of the swing more easily. So when you catch a sinker, it's generally going to go far. And the other thing with sinkers, aside from the damage they incur off the bat, is that they don't tunnel well with, you know, your breaking pitches. And Corey Kluber has relied on that sinker, and it's got hit around, but some of his better tunneled pitches over time, he pairs them with the sinker. But actually, when he tunnels those pitches off of the fastball, they break later into, you know, when the batter has to make his decision on whether or not to swing.
Right.
The pitches separate later. So they're essentially more effective, at least through the numbers. Now, Corey has said that he was never comfortable with his four-seam fastball, and he couldn't locate it, and that's why he kind of discovered the sinker, and that's why he used it more. And obviously, if you can't command your pitches, then it doesn't matter if you're tunneling them.
Sure.
And I totally understand that. But I think because he's coming back from this injury, he's probably got some time to say, all right, what can I do here to improve, you know, my offerings? And he's not going to blow you away with either of his fastballs. He's never been that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he has to be that guy. His cutter and his breaking ball are his two best pitches, and they tunnel very well with that four-seamer. They're more deceiving with that four-seamer. So if he can take this time to learn to locate that four-seamer and kind of work through his confidence issues, by my estimation, I'm not a pitching coach, and I'm just looking at these numbers and going off of things that have produced success around the league, it looks to me like you might want to become more comfortable with the fastball. It's got a high spin rate. It's not something that's going to drop down in the zone. It's going to look like it rises at least to a point, and I think it's probably a better pitch, and I think it will make him better. But he's a two-time Cy Young winner. I don't know that I can sit here and be too critical, but I'm just running the numbers, and this is what I came up with. And I believe in a lot of the things that teams are doing.
No, fascinating stuff. And it's a great point. I mean, look, injury aside, I think we saw at the beginning of the season, there was going to have to be some tweaks because it wasn't the Corey Kluber that we know and love. I think there were going to be tweaks coming regardless. And so you're right. This is a good time to attempt to make those tweaks. Before I get you out of here, Hoop, I want to ask you about Jason Kipnis and the cleanup spot and my flaming hot take that maybe Mike Freeman as your everyday second baseman would be the best course of action moving forward. What do you think?
I think from a performance standpoint, there's not a ton of argument to be made. You know, throughout my 2 years on the beat with the Fan, I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop with Kip and
right.
waiting for him to bounce back. But I think maybe age has gotten the best of him. And I think that ship's probably sailed. And it's at the point where you can definitely call it. I mean, you're paying the guy a ton, but you're probably not going to move him. I don't think there's anyone in the world that would want to take on that money unless you attached a prospect to it.
Yep.
And I don't know how that helps you. So, I mean, honestly, I think you do whatever you can to get Whit Merrifield, and then he's your starting second baseman. Or you can put him in the outfield and do what you got to do with Kipnis for now. But I don't think that's the way to go. I don't think you're wrong. I just don't think it's doable. And, again, the same thing with me telling Corey Kluber that he needs to change his pitch arsenal, that's all fine and well when you look at it from an analytical perspective. And I think you can look at Mike Freeman and say, hey, this guy's got something. The book's not out on him yet. Maybe we can catch lightning in a bottle by getting him there every day and abandoning what is kind of an albatross in Jason Kipnis. But there's more that goes into it. And I know that Terry Francona is not going to ditch a guy like that. I know the kind of message that sends. And also knowing Kip, I don't know that he'd take it well. I don't know him personally, but I've been around the guy, and I don't know how well that would go. I think he's a good teammate, but I think there's a line there to where, you know, you become disgruntled. I think any employee wants to be engaged at work and be happy at work, and no matter how much you try to push through it, if you're not, you're not, and you can be a nuisance and take away from things. So I don't know that you can. I think you definitely can, but I don't know that you can, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. It's very frustrating, and it's not going to happen, but I can't.
Right.
Maybe, can we just move him out of the cleanup spot? How's that? Like, is that a nice little compromise there?
I think that's doable. Yeah. I think Roberto Perez makes more sense in the cleanup spot than Jason Kipnis
sure.
does. I don't know what popping Kipnis in there does for anybody. I don't know what you're trying to accomplish there. And I think Jose Ramirez has earned his spot back in that area too.
Yep. Yeah. There's loyalty, and then there's like, what the hell are we doing? level of loyalty. He's Alex Hooper. He's one of the best. Make sure you follow him on Twitter. It's at Lex Hooper, and read all his stuff for Let's Go Tribe. Thanks, Hoop. Fun catching up as always.
All right, brother. Look forward to talking to you soon.
All right, likewise. There he goes, Alex Hooper. And, of course, all of our guests join us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.